This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:06. You are with Kelvin and Hezril on the evening edition. Our first story this hour is about supply chains and ethics and of trying to manage that, especially when you are a larger company with a presence internationally.
So this comes from a petition filed by anti-trafficking group Liberty Shared against Sime Darby Plantation Berhad, or SDP, alleging that the firm has child and forced labor practices. The NGO called for the US to ban imports of SDP's palm oil products.
Right. And in response, SDP said that they will engage with Liberty Shared, adding that they're taking these allegations seriously. They also highlighted that some of the progress in their labor practices on the ground through work with other NGOs, as well as their commitment to the no deforestation, no peat, and no exploitation or NDPE approach.
And this got us thinking about supply chains and ethics, because moving beyond the story on SDP, it's a concern for businesses in general, but especially for those with an international presence, especially when you have a large supply chain and engage with contractors and companies across different parts of the world. How do you keep each actor in each step accountable?
And companies are also increasingly being held responsible by the media, activists, and governments for the social and environmental implications of their activities. But the pressure to do better also comes internally, be it from activist investors, shareholders, or from present and potential employees that may want the company's values to mirror their own.
And on the consumer end, there's a growing trend of more social-conscious consumers where they're more aware of the knock-on effects of their spending and more selective with their choices, meaning that issues like sustainability and human rights can influence their purchasing decisions.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's a few things working here, right? When we were talking about supply chain ethics, you know, for one, it's really hard sometimes for the consumers themselves to really figure out, what the practices are for a certain company, especially if they don't happen to publish any form of sustainability report, or, you know, even if they do, sometimes, you know, how do you read those properly? And then you have to rely on other sorts of reports. And on the end of the companies, there is perhaps that understanding that, whoa, you know, maybe if I suddenly make drastic moves to make my operations a lot more sustainable, a lot more ethical, it could just cost a lot more, right? Maybe what I'm doing right now is just the necessary evil and just the cost of doing business. But you know, this doesn't really necessarily have to be the case. It could maybe in the short term, if you maybe don't do so great in having good supply chain ethics, short term, it'll be fine, profitable. But in the long term, you might see further consequences.
Yeah, and I think on the consumer end, it really is a luxury to, subscribe to brands that really try to walk the talk when it comes to sustainability and ethics, right? Like you said, if sometimes it comes to costs and many middle and lower class Malaysians don't have the time to look into certain products and decide whether that product is best for them, when at the top of their minds, especially, I guess, at this time, cost is a big factor in just trying to get by.
Yeah, and if we say look at one of the industries that happen to maybe have the least amount of responsibility when it comes to CSR or even just, you know, in their ESG practices, it's, you know, in the fashion industry, right? Just taking a look at Australian fashion companies, a survey found that 93% of these companies still don't know, for example, where the cotton comes from. And this can be quite an expensive area, right? Because there was a sportswear manufacturer there that happened to use child labor back in the late 90s. And then when they managed to get caught, they were fined millions of dollars. And that was very costly, you know, as opposed to, say, maybe investing that money into making sure that you know where your products, you know where your materials come from.
Yeah, and I think here back home, you know, I think even just looking at simple things like pasar malam, like, you know, where does our plastic and our straws come from, and how, you know, whether those, you know, using those things in the first place are sort of ethical when we contribute to, you know, more plastic waste, but then there's COVID-19 happened and single-use plastics are suddenly very, friendly. They make sense because you can dispose of them and make sure that you're maintaining an optimal level of hygiene. So I guess even on that macro level, all these things come into play.
You can let us know how conscious of consumer are you? Do you, before you make a decision to buy something, what kind of research do you do beyond prices, beyond how good a product is? Do you look into the way they source for their materials? Do you look into the kind of beliefs that they are preaching? You can let us know. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we will be speaking with Kor Yu Ling, independent political economist at Sagi and Now Advisors. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:13 on the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezriel, and we're looking at supply chains and ethics, and the kind of implications and extra work you have to do if you happen to be a much larger company with a presence internationally. So we're going to dive deep into this conversation together with Kor Yu Ling, independent political economist at Sagi and Nam Advisors. Yu Ling, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hi, good evening.
So how much control do companies have over their supply chains? And is it feasible for companies to take more control in order to ensure compliance to ethics?
Yeah, I mean, companies have control, especially on their own facilities, when they are, taking their own product from their own estates and processing it and then exporting it. And they would have less control if they were purchasing raw material from outside, or if they had, say, OEM manufacturers. I mean, I think the classic case is basically in terms of this, I suppose what you call the modern slavery or modern labor issues was raised Apple and its supply chain. I mean, that was the high key thing that raised a lot of issues.
So with regards to compliance then, what do audits achieve and how effective have they proven to be?
Yeah, in terms of audits, I mean, it's quite often the case that companies have joined sustainability or other types of certification or other approaches to do with, sustainability and compliance. And then the organizations which they are a member of may have third-party audits that come in, third-party audits rather, and then as in all cases, in most cases, really, companies actually pay for their own auditors, their own third-party audits. And so, for certain supply chains, say, for instance, palm oil, at the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, they have, a system to review the auditors themselves. And there have been even issues about auditors being suspended in the past. And there's always moves to try to improve this situation. But of course, in many countries, in the developed markets, in the West, there's a lot of so-called self-declaration or self-audit is usually the norm. And I guess where we are, the global South or in, developing markets, quite often they require third-party audits. So there's a bit of differences going on there.
Right. And what are the current standards worldwide in terms of transparency and accountability throughout supply chains? How are companies being kept accountable?
Well, depending on which scheme you're a member of, we're seeing a real rising tide on transparency and disclosures that's been going on, the last 15 years and even longer. I think maybe it's a bit more in the last decade plus or so. Palm oil is seeing it. I mean, you're seeing rubber gloves, manufacturers also being asked about their labor. So those issues are arising quite strongly. And there is quite an industry developed now of, consultants and auditors and, ESG and environmental, social, governance rating systems, because what up now is also financiers, the financial markets, very much on the theme of transparency and labor and other issues like deforestation, wanting to know about what's going on.
How much of the responsibility lies in governments in terms of enforcing ethical standards, or does it fall on businesses to do so?
Well, I think if we look at, you know, some of the early movements, you know, there was fair trade, and this had to do with whether farmers are getting a fair price for their produce. And this was some of the earlier movements. And then I think when deforestation became a much a bigger concern, then it started to fall a lot on environmental issues. And I think for companies, especially those who are producing, you know, soft commodities, the agricultural products, it's often been a little bit of a trade-off between environmental and social issues. Because, if, you know, if you go into forest areas, then there's, you know, deforestation or peat development risk. And then if you try to stay away from those areas, and then you could be trying to convert, you know, existing farmlands, buying farms from farmers, etc. Then you are, you know, moving into social issues, and then it could be both as well. So you can see that some of the issues could arise from, you know, disgruntled local people. So, you know, you have seen complaints in certain, you know, regions seem to have, you know, some prevalence of this. And, you know, they have basically campaigned and the awareness has arisen with a lot of major global NGOs being, you know, having specific market campaigns and working on sustainability and certification themselves. And so the NGOs and at the local end, at the international end, and local people and even workers have then had an avenue to raise their problems, awareness of their issues, which may not have been so apparent before, or maybe now it's because, you know, migrant labor is such a big volume of activity now, and people have become so reliant on that. So those issues seem to be a lot more reported nowadays from that front. And then buyers, you know, people who make consumer goods, you know, they have of value in their brands, in their reputations, and they become sensitive to these issues. And then I think with the explosion of issues on the internet and into social media as well, it seems to have pressured policymakers in key markets to then introduce legislation and regulation.
Right. Among all of those that you've listed, from community complaints to, say, exposure through media reports and all that, what tends to work best in terms of getting companies to commit to having an ethical supply chain?
Well, I think it's quite clear that quite often the largest companies with big market shares and good profit margins are more easily able to do so immediately, the big ones. So what you have is a big companies getting onto the compliance because they're already there, they're already public listed. But really, I think the most fundamental thing out there, that at least one of the most fundamental things that I can see out there, is really the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, where they have taken up new regulations in recent years, which is basically to counter human trafficking and modern slavery issues. And this is the most profound because basically they can stop your cargo. A lot of the other issues are really more about, you know, stakeholder engagement and getting companies to make pledges and commitments and, you know, like, I'm going to do this by this year. But really, I mean, you know, this issue on labor and the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol is the most profound because your cargo is stuck. It can't move. So that's the biggest thing for me anyway, for now.
And speaking of stakeholders, looking at what Liberty Shared has done, does external pressure from trade partners usually affect change? And is this a more sustainable way of addressing ethical supply chains?
Yeah, I mean, I think having, you know, a country stop your cargo is really profound. And then, you know, to get back, you know, takes a couple of months to sort that out. But of course, on a voluntary basis, on a B2B, so business to business, there's already quite a lot of things happening because, companies or suppliers or products who have maybe stepped up less to the sustainability and transparency. You have buyers who then say that, we're not so keen to buy from you because, you are producing things in another part of the world where we're not sure about the environmental and social standards. So then it starts to impact at a group level as well. And then especially if companies get suspended in some of these certification programs. I mean, a Malaysian plantation company has in the past. They have literally lost market share. And then their competitors pick it up. So although, something like U.S. regulations to stop your cargo is, seems the most profound, there can be also quite impactful things happening on this voluntary certification basis as well.
Right. And finally, there's also a belief that a responsible supply chain takes more cost and resources from a company. Is that true in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you have to hire, and biggest companies hire dozens of people, external consultants, NGOs, stakeholder relations people. So you can imagine the teams that you have to set up. And, if you look at all the, the big accounting firms now, I mean, of course, you do have the stock exchange as well, requiring you to have sustainability reports. There is a sustainability consulting industry going on right now. And, a lot of young people are also, getting degrees and masters in environmental science. So this is, quite a shift in what's going on. So, the rich companies, the biggest companies with market share, with good, decent profit margin, especially public listed, these are the ones who do so. But often they are like 20-30% of the market. What about the 70-80%? Who are not really there. And of course, this also seems a bit disadvantageous to small farmers and small companies as well, because, it does cost quite a lot to do things, especially when, Western markets don't really accept self-declarations and self-audits. So I think this is where, government and agencies could maybe step up on the policing to reduce the overall cost of compliance to make customers happy.
Yuling, on that note, thank you again for those insights.
Thank you.
That was Kaw Yuling, independent political economist at Segi Anam Advisors, talking to us about, essentially ethical supply chains, as well as, when it comes to you being a large company with a presence internationally, what are some of the challenges that you face? We are, after this, going to be crossing over to the Health Ministry's press conference. So in the meantime, we have Rave On by Buddy Holly. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.